It was the only cover in this body of water, and it drew crappie like a magnet.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
So we finally got out fishing together again on your lake. It was awesome.
Long time coming.
Yeah, it was. And here we go again. Second cast, you hook up with a huge largemouth.
Would have been a personal best.
Yeah, would have. That's the key word. And I gave you credit for that. I counted that one because you had it to the boat. You had a finger in its mouth. You were landing it.
It was hooked.
You were in the process of lipping it to swing it in, and he flips and pops your jig off your line. Now, word of caution here to our listeners. You were using braided line, using a line called Easy Braid, made by Spiderwire. I used it when I first started using braid, and I used it because it was the cheapest stuff I could find, and I wasn't sure I would be converting to braid, so I'd, you know, get in on a low initial investment and see how it works for me. There's two things I did not like about the Easy Braid, and that is the line. It would fray real easy, and I had to constantly retie, and it did not hold knots well. Palomar knots would slip. Clinch knots would slip. That's why I adopted the policy that I use with braid. If I tie direct, I'll put an extra wrap. I'll do six wraps on a clinch knot. I switched to Spiderwire Stealth Braid, which holds knots well. Suffix 832 holds knots well. Power Braid holds it well. And the Bass Pro Shops XPS Braid holds knots well. When you told me you were using the Easy Braid, I said, that's why your knots are slipping, because you had a problem with
three fish.
How many hooks, what, you tied on three, yeah, and they came off first hook set, first fish.
And that was my supply. I had one left. And then luckily you stepped in and you super glued it because you were getting so fed up with the knots. I hadn't tied it poorly. It just wasn't holding. I mean, it wasn't holding.
I tied a polymer knot, and that was trying to slip. So I did a clinch knot with six wraps above it, and that was trying to slip. So I said, I'll fix this. And I super glued it. Then it held the rest of the day.
But then I caught another personal best out of it. I'll count it for my career, because I never got a weight on the one that I talked about. But so personal best again anyway.
Well, full disclosure here, you kicked my butt. Counting the one that you that pulled off as you were landing it, you got five largemouth.
Six.
I got four.
Six to five, right?
We fished 3 hours in pretty much steady rain until we were soaked enough and said, but that's enough. Because it was raining hard at the end. The last 30 minutes, it decided to pour again. Mm-hmm. But you got five. I got four. I did get a pickerel. I had five fish, but we're only counting bass that day. And your heaviest weighed 4.4. My best one was 3.10.
So let's talk about that real quick. We held them differently in the photos.
Oh yeah.
And your 3.10. I thought yours was 3.3 or 3. Was it 3.10? Is that what it was? Okay.
It's on my voice recorder.
You held it a certain way, and yours looks bigger than mine.
Yeah.
From the picture.
When you held yours, you had it. It was facing kind of at an angle to the camera.
Yeah.
So you couldn't see the full body profile, and you had it back even with you. And everybody knows if you want your fish to look big, hold it towards the camera.
I was doing a Jimmy Houston trying to kiss it.
Yeah, you were. You can tell that in that picture where you were in your Jimmy Houston pose, you could tell that fish.
He was a big fish. Dirt. He had a big, yeah,
you could
he was.
See that.
And you thought it was 2 pounds.
Yeah, I thought it was 2 3/4 till we put it on a scale. But I never held the fish. I'm looking at it. You probably always had an angle, you know, towards me. I didn't see the full body profile. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But I am never that far off. I use a digital electronic scale, made my Rapala, extremely accurate, extremely reliable. I'm typically 99 times out of 100 within 2 ounces. I was a pound and a half off on that fish.
One last thing that I want to point out.
Yeah.
Because in the previous episode, You talked about how you've been paired up with a guy where all he did was throw a Senko with a spinning rod. And that's all I did. However, no, that's not entirely true. I did switch off to that fluke. I caught two on a fluke, and I caught two on the Senkos. Well, really, I caught more than that because I lost those other three.
If we had caught every fish that we had contacted or hooked up, that
we'd have had some serious numbers.
We'd have had 18, 19 fish that day. But that's everybody's story.
But it's the truth. They just weren't hanging on. You know, we were both pulling some. I mean,
it's the way they were taking it, and that's something that that's one of those variables you have no control over.
The big fish were moving that day.
Yeah, they were. There are so many quality fish in that lake. I will be back. We're doing it again.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That was a blast. I'm just super impressed with the quality of the fish there, and they pull so good. I just want to catch them on my spinner bait so bad because I love throwing the blades.
But and your spinner bait was not performing for you.
I never had a strike on it.
Nope.
Like, what is wrong with these
only
fish?
On the soft plastics. That was it.
Yeah, the water was 60 degrees. They should be hitting these. But
anyway,
and especially with the overcast and the rain, with those light conditions, those fish should have been out roaming. And they were, but they were looking down, not up.
I have a weather statement for this too.
Okay.
We had a solar flare storm Friday, I believe, whatever it was. And then we had that crazy Northern Lights display Friday night into Saturday. Did the Northern Lights and the solar flare have an effect on the fish?
Good question.
Because they were all big ones. Did it make all the big ones move?
I don't have an answer for
that. Yeah, right? So give us an email if you think that the Northern Lights and solar flares affect fishing. Anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com.
I will tell you what, every fish we caught was a quality fish. There were no small ones that day.
No.
Every fish was a quality fish.
They were all big. There were no tiny anything. They were all giants.
Quality fish. It was a blast. We're doing that again. So what I want to talk about this episode, I'm trying to stay relevant with these podcasts and stay current. And what we're coming right into when this is going to air is the spring crappie and bluegill seasons. And I love this time of year. I mean, again, just to update on my turkey season, I took one bird this past week, Tuesday morning, shot a bird that was just a hair over 18 and a half pounds. Good bird to start with. A lot of meat. My grandson was right in the middle of it. I want to be there when you cut it open. You know, he's turned 7 this month and he's right into it. He's walking around with a fistful of feathers and pointing out bones and asking me what the organs are. He is into it. And I got a good start to my turkey season. I've got one more tag. I'm going to get up at 3:30 tomorrow morning and go out again, see if we can wrap up the season, fill the second tag, and then I can sleep until 5 o'clock. But this time of year, now our walleye season is open and the crappie and bluegill fishing is coming into its own. I fished a lake yesterday after I turkey hunted. I came home, loaded up a boat, and went to this lake. I've only fished it twice. I only started fishing it last year. I'd heard good things about this lake. It was a bass lake, but I didn't know if it was public or private. I mean, there's no posted signs on it, but you hear through the grapevine. I asked a reliable source who would give me who would know the truth and would actually give it to me. And he said, no, it's a public body of water. There's even a gravel launch there on the side of the road, like halfway down the length of this body of water. It's maybe 100 acres, about the size of your lake. I was looking at it yesterday. It's about the same size, identical practically. And it's shallow on the roadside. It's got a deep hole in the middle and then it shallows up on the backside. I'd heard good things about it. This guy warned me. He said there's a farmer who owns a lot of property on the lower end of it that the water comes right to his property line and he will harass you. He will tell you it's a private lake. You're not allowed on it, but he's wrong. And if there's any problem, you can call the troopers or call DEC and they will let him know that you are allowed to fish it. So he said, so just don't worry about him. Well, I fished it last year for the first time, went in with my spinner baits, my Senkos, a black and blue jig and craw, a topwater, and a shallow driving crankbait rod. Went in with 5 rods just to do my my bass program. Never fished this lake before. Didn't know anything about it. Took some portable electronics, and I caught 42 bass, including one that was just over 5 pounds. And I was impressed with the lake, but I also noticed in fishing it a second time, I was seeing a few crappie. And there was another gentleman on the lake that day that had a 13-inch crappie he held up for me. I said, oh, wow. So I had seen a couple small ones that took an 8-ounce spinnerbait, but I'd also caught one keeper. I caught maybe 5 or 6 crappie the second time I fished it, and he showed me that there were some large ones in there. He had one 13-inch crappie. He kept a large bass, too, Amish guy. So I put that on my list to come and check this spring for crappie. And I went there yesterday. Again, I just took my crappie program, which is 4 of the Bass Pro Shops Microlite Elite Series rods. They're 6.5 foot, one piece, super light action with a 7-ball bearing reel, Bass Pro Shops reel. I use 6-pound spider wire stealth braid, and I use 16th ounce jigs. I used a squirming shad. I'll get into my lures later, but I caught 25 crappie yesterday, including one that measured just over 15.5 inches. And just, that's a huge crappie for this area up here. I didn't know they were that big in that. It was like a hubcap with a head and a tail on it. But here's the thing. A crappie that size should have been over 2 pounds. It was flat as a pancake. I'm guessing it was an old male. They only live 6-7 years, and it takes them 4 years to reach like 12 inches under really good conditions.
And 15 inches ain't no crappie.
No.
So many people call them crappie.
Well, that's the way it's pronounced up here in the—
it's supposed to be crappie, right? It's crappie.
No one's gonna call it a— well, in the south it's crappie, and I kind of adopted that, and I've pronounced it that way for 40 years.
How do you pronounce it? Give us an email, anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. If they're from here, they'll say crappie.
Crappie.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a huge specimen. Black crappie, of course. There are white crappie in New York State, but only in a few isolated locations. Whitney Point Reservoir has them out western New York. I don't know if Chautauqua Lake does or not. They say Saratoga Lake does, but I've only ever caught black crappies there. But into getting what I want to talk about here, crappie spawn when the water gets around 60 degrees. I believe they'll at like 58 to 64 is the range. But if you look it up most places, it'll say they spawn when the water temp's around 60 degrees. And they spawn in shallow, weedy bays. We're in the middle of May, coming into the second half of the month, and that is just absolute prime time. I'm still wearing my camo from turkey hunting in the morning when I'm on the water fishing for these crappie. And they make tremendous table fare. And in my opinion, they are the king of the panfish. Now, I chase a lot of perch in March and early April, but crappie are the king of the panfish. They're just a magnificent fish to chase. And you can tell when you hook them. I mean, yesterday I was hooking up going, this feels like a crappie, or this one feels like a perch. Everybody knows the bluegill because they got that thump. They go in those tight circles when you get them to the boat. You can always tell when you got a bluegill because you're just feeling that da-da-da-da-da-da when thumping that rod. And the same thing with the pumpkin seed. And a lot of people confuse bluegill and pumpkin seed. Both good to eat. I don't keep pumpkin seed. I keep bluegill. Pumpkin seed, their hide is very coarse and very tough. You got to resharpen your fillet knife a lot, and I just prefer to eat bluegill. So crappie are very, very prolific. They've got limits on them now in New York State. It used to be there was no size limit, no bag limit, any size, anytime, all year. And then, good grief, probably 10, 12 years ago, they decided to go with a size limit, and they set it at 6 inches. I never understood that. Who's going to keep a 6-inch crappie? You know, who's going to do that? How much meat is there? Let these fish grow a little bit. And then a number of years ago, they changed it to 9 inches. And I said, well, that makes a lot more sense. That's not a big crop either, but at least you get, because of the way their body profile is, you get a decent fillet off them. And then 2 years ago, they changed it to 10 inches, which is even better. Those 9 inches, 9.5 inches that you catch and have to put back, they're next year's 11, 12 inch fish. They really, really are, if you've got the right ingredients. But just to let you know, a 1/2 pound crappie, that is not a big one. A 1/2 pound female black crappie can lay anywhere between 20 and 50,000 eggs. A very, very minute portion of those survives. That's why they lay so many, because most of them, the vast majority, do not make it. I'm guessing somewhere between 3% and 5% make it, but you're talking hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of crappie, and these bigger lakes are doing that same thing. So you're still having thousands that survive. So they're very prolific. So bag limits are generally very liberal. In New York State now, you can keep 25 a day, and I'm glad they put a limit on it. I don't want to clean more than 25 any single day, but I will go back the next day and catch 25 more because I like to eat them. But as with all my fishing, when I'm fishing for the freezer, I harvest selectively. I'll catch 60 crappie and I'll only keep 15 or 20. Sometimes I'll keep a limit, but most of the time I'll keep 15 or 20. That's 3-4 meals right there. That's plenty.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're good. They reach maturity as fast as 2 years, and where they can reproduce, and they live to be 6-7 years old. That's it. But again, in 4 years, they can reach 12 inches, and there's nice fillets off a 12 inch crappie. A lot of people don't know how to tell the difference between a black crappie and a white crappie. And the biggest thing is just look at them. Yes, they're very similar. The body profiles, the black crappie are a little bit taller. The hump on their back is a little bit more pronounced, whereas the white crappie are a little bit, they have the same body profile, but they're slightly more elongated, more, you know, for lack of a better word, they're a little bit stretched out a little bit more. But white crappie have vertical bars on their sides, like 6 or 7 vertical bars in their body pattern, whereas the black crappie have scattered blotches or mottling across their side, like a calico pattern. That's why they got the nickname calico bass. If you can't tell that way, if you're fishing really dingy off-color water and they're kind of faded and pale, and it's really hard to, chances are those are white crappie. They like more turbid water, and they tend to be a little bit lighter in color. Some of the black crappies I caught the other day were just so dark, and those are generally males that are getting ready to spawn, the way I understand it. But there's a definitive way that the biologists use, and anybody can do this. On their dorsal fin, they have a few spiny rays, and then they ahead of the fin. A white crappie will always have 6 spines on the dorsal, whereas a black will have 7 or 8. And that's a definitive way to tell. We were fishing the old Erie Canal. They just call it the canal. It's over in German Flats on the way to Utica. A buddy of mine, here's a funny story here. A buddy of mine and I we wanted to fish that. We'd never put a boat on it. So we drove out there. It's about an hour from my house. There was a parking area, but there's no access there. You have to go over an embankment, which we did, and it's all public property there. It's a park, and we're fishing. Now, that's the very first time we ever fished this place, and we caught smallmouth, we caught walleye, we caught bluegill, we caught crappie. We're catching. I looked at it, I said, Rick, these are white crappie. He's like, what's the difference? So I was showing him, and we actually, there's white crappie in that canal. So we're like, man, we just came to fish. We didn't bring anything to take fish home. I didn't know there was crappie in here. They were big too. I got to go back there and do that. making a personal note to myself.
So what's the funny story?
The funny story is we're there fishing, saying, well, I wish I could bring my like my aluminum bass boat here would be perfect for this, But and here comes an aluminum bass boat down through. We flagged the guy down, They said, there's a boat ramp around here. He goes, well, about 3 miles up. I said, oh, okay. Good to know. And we said, hey, can you eat the fish out of here? He said, well, the water here, you know, are there any health advisories? He said, well, the water here comes out of Black Lake. Never met this guy before. He's like staring me down. He looks me up and down. He goes, at your age, I wouldn't worry about it. And that he was, took off.
Yeah, because that was my question as to how clean the canal water is.
It looks, it's clear. It looks clean. Said it comes right out of Black Lake. I don't think there's any advisories on it at all, but he looks at me and he's like, yeah, at your age, I wouldn't worry about it. Yeah. Thanks. Nice guy. But yeah, they are tremendous table fare crappie are. A lot of people like, and I think a reason most people like them so much is they have no fishy taste. I mean, catfish have that, all good fish to eat. But crappie, very similar to walleye, they have no fishy aftertaste whatsoever. Actually, I love to eat crappie. They have like a grainy texture. They lack flavor for me. They're kind of bland. Like perch have a very distinct, tremendous flavor. So do bluegill. Walleye are good. I just don't think they're as good as perch because they don't have as much flavor. So we just season them with a little salt and it's fine. When I do crappie fillets, I actually think the meat is a little bland for my taste. So when I dust the fillets, I sprinkle lemon pepper in the flour and in the breadcrumbs that I use to coat them before I fry them up. And then I always use tartar sauce on my crappie fillets. The only ones I do it with, because it gives them a little more zip and a little more flavor, which I just think they, for my taste, they're a little bland. So I just try to add a little flavor to them. Now, what these fish feed on, they feed on crustaceans, insects, other fish. That crappie have a big mouth, very similar to a largemouth bass, similar to a rock bass. So I only think crappie have a much bigger mouth than even a rock bass. They can fit some pretty big stuff in there. And so one of my favorite baits to use for them, of course, is my 2-inch squirming shad. If they're really, really fussy, I'll go down to what I call them guppies. They look at, a lot of companies make them. Bass Pro Shops makes a version called the stubby butt.
The stubby butt?
That's what they call it.
Here, go down there and fish a couple.
It's very, if you're familiar with their products, it's very similar to the baby shad. It's just a shorter version. Baby shads are like 2 inches and the stubby butt is only an inch and a half. They look, it's like a plastic version of a mousie that you would use when you ice fish. It's got a, like a very stubby plastic profile body with a straight tail. That's at the slightest twitch that tail wiggles, but it's just a straight tail, like a mouse tail. I've just always generically called them guppies. There's a lot of companies that make them. Bobby Garland makes a lot of those baits. Bass Assassin makes them. Bass Pro Shops. I don't know if Gary Yamamoto has a version of it or not. I'd have to check. I just use the brands that I use and stock on them heavily. But the squirming shad 2-inch is just a crappie slayer because they love to eat minnows because they can fit them in their mouth. Now, if you look at a crappie, here's the thing. They're not bottom feeders. Not at all. The way their eyes are positioned on their head and their mouth, their jaw is pointed upward. They feed up. You want to suspend that bait above them and they'll almost always rise up to eat it. They don't feed on the bottom like a lot of other fish do. They suspend in the water column a lot. They relate to wood heavily, fallen trees, deadfalls, brushes, sunken brush piles. People sink all the time, put brush piles on to attract crappies because they just, it's like a magnet. And I got a classic example. There's a lake near my house, still got crappie in it. When I was a kid, that's where I was brought up fishing. My dad used to take me to this place all the time. It's a long rectangular shape, man-made body of water at the bottom of this steep, steep hill. And it's got a small earthen dam on the end. I would say the deepest water now is probably about 16 feet after all these years, but it never had any vegetation or brush or anything like that. Had a very featureless shoreline. But that big steep hill on the backside of it, they used to hay. Farmers used machinery, and they, although it was steep, they would cut the hay off all summer long. But one year they were using a hay rake, and it came off the tractor, and it came down this, and this is a long hill. I mean, it's probably 150 yards at a 45 degree incline to the top of this hill, and it came down and hit that water and got submerged. There's no way to get that out because it's a 45 degree incline right to the edge of the water. There is no way for them, unless you got 150 yards of chain, you're not getting that back. And we knew right where that hay rake was. It was the only cover in this body of water, and it drew crappie like a magnet. You know what a hay rake looks like? It was the old, had the old steel wheels and that metal steel seat in the middle of it, and it had the tines that hung over to rake the hay. They would get behind that hay rake, and we would take a white marabou jig, and we cast it across that hay rake, had maybe 3 foot of water above it, and we would just pull it slowly until it was over top of that rake, and then we would let it free fall on slack line, and that little white marabou jig would just flutter down in front of those tines on that hay rake, and these crappie would slide through those tines. The water was clear. We could watch this whole thing going down, and we were sight fishing them. And you could watch them come out, swim out between those hay rake tines and suck in your jig and set the hook. And we would catch crappie after crappie. It was full of them. And that lasted about 15 to 20 years until finally the only thing left was like the top half of one of the wheels. And you could see the seat. And then, I mean, all that's been rusted to the bottom and become bottom content for like the last 20 years at least. But while that was in the water, it was a crappie magnet because it was the closest thing they had to any kind of cover, and there were no brush piles. So, but if you've got brush piles or bushes, flooded bushes or deadfalls or treetops in a body of water that's got crappie, that's where they're going to be. And right now, with the water temp where I fished that new lake that I fished this week, it was 60, the water temp was right at 60 degrees. So they are looking to spawn, and I was finding them around grass flats, anywhere between 6 and 9 foot deep is where I was catching them. And one of the best methods, and you would ask me about this, I use a slip. I have two rods that I use for a slip float if I have enough of a chop and a light breeze. And I do not use live bait when I fish open water. Everything is done with plastics and artificials. That's just something I've imposed on myself. I prefer to do it that way. I don't like to use live bait. I'd rather catch them on lures. In bass tournaments, we can't use live bait. So I prefer to catch everything on artificials. But that's just me. So even when using a slip float for crappie, I'm suspending a small 16th ounce jig head with a soft plastic, either one of those mousy style baits or something that's really good for bluegill and crappie. Both is a little 1 inch or 1.5 inch tube jig, or my squirming shad I'll use underneath the slip float if we got a really good chop, because it'll jig that bait for you. Now, if you don't know what a slip float is, this is a float like a pencil. I use the Thill slip floats made by Mick Thill. These are the best ones I've ever used. They're gorgeous. He uses beautiful wood in them. They're not expensive. They'll have a plastic sleeve that goes through the float, almost like a pencil style bobber. You slide a little bead on your line, and then a bobber stop, either a plastic one that you, there's different styles. Plastic ones have four little perforated holes in you snake your line through it and it'll hold its position. Or I like the little rubber bobber stops that come on the wire. You usually get 25 for like $3. They're inexpensive. And you slide that on your line below the bead, and then you put your slip float on, and then you tie your jig to your main line. The beauty of the slip float is it's hard to use a bobber or a float when fish are suspended, say, 8 feet down. That's cumbersome to cast if you use the old clip style bobbers. To have 8 foot of line hanging underneath that and throwing a 16th ounce jig besides, it just cartwheels in the air, and you need a super long rod to have 8 foot of line hanging down to make a cast. And don't do that to your line. Don't use the old cheap clip style bobbers that we all grew up with as a kid. All they do is pinch and damage your line. A slip float will never do that. And the beauty of the slip float is it slides right. You can set that bobber stop for whatever depth you feel those fish, or you see on your electronics that those fish are suspended at. Or if you got grass bed that's 2 foot high and you know you're in 6 foot of water, you want to set that slip float at 3.5 foot to get that bait about 6 inches above that grass, which would be ideal. All you have to do is slide the bobber stop to that point of your line, and that float is going to slide right down against your jig. You can reel that bobber stop right onto your spool, and it'll go right through the guides. They're tiny, but the little hole in that bead is too small to let that slide through, and that establishes your depth. When your float first hits the water, it'll lay on its side. And the weight of that 16th-ounce jig, it takes a little while. It will pull the line through until it hits that stop, and then your float will stand up briefly. Then a fish takes your bait, and it's diver down, and you got a fish on. Slip floats are tremendous, but when I use a slip float, I use a two-anchor system if I'm in one of my smaller boats. I'll use a Cheney-style anchor, which has 2 points that pivot, because they'll really grab the bottom, whether it's weeds or soft mud or grab, those points will dig in. And I'll use that on a long, I'll give it lots of slack. And then once I have the boat, it's going to swing back and forth on that long line. When you get it positioned where you want, I have a heavy anchor. I call it my pin down anchor. It's a heavy anchor that'll go straight down to the bottom, and that locks the back of the boat, so my boat isn't swinging back and forth now. I only do that if I'm going to use a slip float, because then you can throw that slip float out and it'll stay in position and you can cast all around it, but you don't have to worry about the boat swinging back and forth and crossing lines and all that business.
So was that something that you figured out on your own, or is that a technique that is pretty well known as far as using slip floats?
The positioning the boat and all that is something I figured out on my own. I learned about slip bobbers about maybe 35 years ago, and I've used nothing but ever since. Because it's the perfect presentation system for suspended fish, which crappie do often, and it's just the perfect system. It's fully adjustable, and it's a beautiful thing. The man who created that, my hat's off to him. I'd love to meet him someday and thank him profusely for giving us that tool. So that's the slip float setup I use, and I use it a lot for crappie. We use it a lot for perch in the spring when they're in 10 foot of water, believe it or not. And if you have the right conditions with that light chop, you can catch a ton of perch on that while you're casting your main line. When it's a busy, busy day, you can't keep two rods going. Mm-hmm. I use slip floats supplemental to I always cast. Always. That's my main deal. Slip floats are supplemental to that and just keeps another line out there if I'm around a big school of fish. But sometimes you can't run two rods because they're biting too good. And that's a good problem to have. I don't mind that at all. Now I want to switch to bluegill, because that's coming next. And the thing about bluegill is the water's got to be a little bit warmer for them to spawn. But in our region, bluegills spawn kind of like bass with the full moon. They spawn with the full moon, and when the water's in the mid-60s. In our region, that's always May is when it starts. The full moon in May is a gold mine for if you've got bluegill in your lake, and I'm talking big palm-sized bluegills, the ones that are hard to get your hand around, those are the ones I target, what we call the bulls. Fish that are like 9 inches. That's a huge bluegill. You get thick fillets off of them. And I'll tell you what, we have those Monday night fish fries, my dad and I, every single week over three years now. When we do bluegill, it's 5 fillets a piece. That's a meal. Mm. But I'm chasing the biggest ones I can find. And I'm selective on those bigger ones. And we have some lakes where they call it the trophy. And my hat's off to New York State for doing this. The Trophy Panfish Initiative. It only applies to certain lakes in different counties. Three of the lakes I fish regularly are part of that Trophy Panfish Initiative. Bluegill have to be 8 inches or bigger to keep, and you can only keep 15 a day. I think that's awesome because the lakes that they're doing this in are known for outsized bluegills, and that's just going to help maintain that, and it's most likely going to improve it. So I'm all about that. My hat's off to them for doing that because, again, bluegill used to be any size, any number, all year. And it's still all year, but there are limits, and especially, and they're even more restrictive in those lakes that are part of the Trophy Panfish Initiative. And I love giant perch, giant crappie, and giant bluegill. So I'm all over this program. It's going to provide more of that. And if people obey the law, it's going to work for everybody.
So what are you catching these bluegill on?
I use a lot of those mousy style baits because bluegill have a much smaller mouth. When they're super aggressive, they'll hit a squirming shad. And it always surprises me because how did he get that in his mouth? Even big bull bluegills have a small, tiny mouth. So my go-tos for the bluegill, they eat insects, crustaceans, little tiny small minnows, bass fry. They're notorious for raiding the nests after the bass spawn and feeding on their fry. That's why the males guard the nest and chase all those nest raiders off, all those why they chase the bluegill off. But bluegill, interestingly enough, will eat vegetation if necessary. One of the panfish that'll actually eat vegetation. And a lot of people don't know that, but bluegill will actually do that if they need to. But they feed on small stuff. So I'll use 1-inch tube jigs. I'll use those little mousy, but I'll use the shorter, the inch and a half ones. And the old beetle spins, the grubs that used to come on those were only an inch long. And the beetle spin had a little spinnerbait harness on it with a little Colorado blade. They caught a lot of bluegill. I still have those. I don't throw the beetle spin with a harness. I throw a little 16th ounce jig with just that beetle spin grub on it. They're only an inch long, but they work tremendously well. They look like a little tiny slug is what they look like. That's what they're shaped like. And they're only an inch long. Perfect for a bluegill to get in his mouth. But the interesting thing about bluegills is they don't just spawn in May. They'll spawn across several months. They'll spawn with a full moon in May, June, and July, and sometimes as late as August in New York State up here. In the South, of course, they start in February and go into June sometimes. But it's all regional where, you know, when your water hits that mid 60 degree temp. The best month in New York is the May full moon. The reason being that they'll spawn in shallow flats. And everybody that fishes has seen these. If you got clear enough water, when bluegill spawn, they create colonies of beds. It looks like the surface of the moon, where it looks like somebody took a beach ball and pressed it in the bottom and made a pattern all the way across. All you see is those little shallow impressions, one right against the other, for as far as you can see. Those are bluegill colonies. You find one of those with a full moon in May and throw that little beetle spin grub across it, or a little tube jig 1 inch long across it, or a little, you know, one of those little mousy style Bass Pro Shops stubby butts across that.
Stubby butt.
Hang on. Hang on.
Hang on to your stubby butt.
Hang on to your stubby butt and your ultralight rod, because they are going to stretch your line. And they're tremendous table fare. They got a unique flavor. I'll give you a recipe at the end that's worth trying. It's Kevin Van Dam's bluegill recipe. It's the KVD recipe. And if you don't know it, I've done it. It's amazing. You got to try this. But bluegill, they lay up to as many as 38,000 eggs. One female.
Oh, wow.
That's ridiculous. But their nests get raided horribly by all fish feed on bluegill fry. That's why, I mean, nature takes care of its own. That's why they spawn in colonies, just because it creates... predators aren't going to come in and clean out one nest. That's why they spawn in colonies, just so the law of averages, the numbers enough survive. And bluegill are very prolific. Most lakes have thousands of them. Again, I target those 8, 9, 9.5-inch bluegills that you can't even get your hand around. Those are the ones. But it's a fast process too. This is unbelievable. They'll lay thousands of eggs and they hatch in as little as 2 to 5 days. Now the male will stay with the nest and guard the fry, but only for a short period of time. And then they're on their own. And actually, bluegill will turn around and feed on their own fry. They're like, oh, there's a meal. You know, short-term memory issues, I think they have. Those weren't my kids. Those were Bernie's kids, you know, across the way. They guard the fry for maybe up to a week. And then all those little fry are on their own. Let me back up. The full moon in May is the best one because at that point, at least here in the Northeast, the grass beds are just getting underway. And a month later, when you hit the full moon in June, a lot of the areas where they spawn are weed choked with that early pondweed. Pondweed is confusing for a lot of people because it's one of the first ones to come up and it mats on the surface and covers these flats where these bluegills spawn. And everybody figures, well, that spot is shot for the rest of the year. That is not the case. That pondweed is the first one that grows up and mats on the surface. It's also the first one to rescind and die off. By late July, those areas aren't weed choked anymore. Not the ones that came up with that early pondweed. You can fish them again. But the best time is absolutely the May full moon. And I've got three lakes I'm going to hit across that full moon. And we'll do a report on that accordingly. But that
I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, I look forward to doing it. I got to give you a good turkey report so far, half of it. We'll see how this week goes.
Okay.
But those are the lures and techniques I like to use for crappie. Again, are the Bass Pro Shops Squirm and Shad, of course, and my two favorite colors, Pearl Dace and Green Pumpkin Pearl Hologram, the ones that I promote all the time because they catch everything and they are tremendous crappie catchers. But I also use the Bass Pro Shops Baby Shad in a variety of colors. Check them out online at basspro.com, and they are fish catchers. And there's many other baits that work as well. And for the bluegill, I like the smaller 1 to 1.5-inch baits, like the little tube jigs, the little beetle spin grubs, and again the mousy style soft plastics. But here's Kevin Van Dam's recipe for the bluegill fillets. Once you have your fillets all done, and I always rinse mine and I soak them in a bowl of water, just they'll gain a little volume. If you got a little blood in some of it, which bluegill come out pretty clean, but if you do have, I'll put a little salt in the water and it just removes that, and they're pure white. He'll take a can of Sprite soda, pour it in a bowl, and he'll soak his bluegill fillets in that in the fridge for 2 hours. And then he'll mix up a batter, whatever kind of batter you like, and he'll deep fry them. But that Sprite gives them a little sweet zip to them. I've tried it. It's incredibly good.
Obey your thirst.
Yeah.
That's the Sprite slogan.
The Sprite slogan.
Obey your thirst.
Yeah. And bring it on with your fish fry.
There it is.
5 days will be in that full moon phase, and I will be on those bluegill lakes, but I will be fishing for crappie. Up until then, I will concentrate on the bluegill for the week either side of that full moon, 3 days prior, during, and 3 days after, and then I'm right back on the crappie. And in the meantime, making a few bass trips to keep that count alive. I am down to the final 93. So I sit for 36,000 caught and released. I said I would do it in May. I had a couple more weeks to get that done. And I've got to mix that in with turkey hunting, bluegill, and crappie fishing. So
love it.
One or two good trips. When I hit it just right, I'll have it done.
Nice.
I got lakes I can go and catch 50 on this time of year with my beloved spinner baits. So we'll see. We'll keep you posted. Stay tuned. And as always, we tremendously appreciate all you out there that are listening and giving the good comments. We appreciate it. Without you, we're doing this for nothing. And try to keep it relevant and current to what's going on in the fishing world right now that you can go out and do, because I'm just trying to take 40 years of information I've recorded and pass it along and shorten the learning curve for everybody out there gracious enough to listen to us.
Send us an email if you'd like. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com. That's my third drop for today during the episode. Also, thank you for those of you out there who have added to our ratings on Spotify. We got a couple more of them on there. So if you guys like what you heard today, give us a 5-star rating. It helps. And
it does tremendously. We appreciate it. Makes us look really good.
It does. And check out, of course, Roy's Insta at Roy Bilby, all lowercase.
And as always, we will do our best every episode to help you tap into your angler within.